Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Text 16. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Svayam Dhanuhu Dvari Nidhaya Mayam Bhratuhu Puruha Maramasu Tarditaha Api Saha Itam Ati Ulbana Karna Banahi Gata Vyathaha Ayat Uru Manayanaha Swayam Dhanu Dvari Nidhaya Mayam Bratuf Puro Marmasu Tarditopi Sa Ittamutyulbana Karna Banair Gatavyato Yad Uru Manayanaha Swayam Dhanur Dvari Nidhaya Mayam Bhatuf Puru Marmasu Tarditopi Sa Ittamutyulbana Karna Banair Gatavyato Yaduru Manayanaha Ladies, Swayam, He Himself, Dhanuhu, Dwari, Bow on the Door, Nidhaya, Keeping, Mayam, The External Nature, Bhratuhu, brothers. Puraha, from the palace. Maramasu, in the core of the heart. Tarditaha, being afflicted. Api, in spite of. Saha, he, Vidura. Itham, like this. Ati, Ulbana, severely. Karna, ear. Banahi, by the arrows. Gata, Vyataha, without being sorry. Ayat, excited. I wonder if that should be exited. Uru, great. Manayanaha, so thinking. It may have been corrected. 3:1:16. Thus, being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord. But, due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under such influence of the external nature by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path toward his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme, yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the place and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyataha, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Nama Shrishtam Manumapi Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagratam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavartim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shrigurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutang Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishaka Vitamscha Guru Vaishnav Bhagavan Tina Smarani Hoi Vigna Vinashan Anayashi Hoi Nijavan Chita Puran Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Being shot with arrows through the ears. Painful. We cannot imagine how painful it is. Not literal arrows, but the arrows of harsh words. That is stated in various parts of Shastra that more painful than physical arrows or physical weapons, which can be extremely painful. Weapons are made not for making people feel good, but for minimally wounding them, if not to kill them. It's painful. But more painful are harsh words, especially if spoken by someone you love. If someone you don't know insults you, and especially if it's meaningless, then you simply, why should you take it seriously? Of course, many people do. But the pain of being insulted by someone you love goes to the core of the heart. The arrow goes to the head. The arrow through the ear goes to the head, and the arrows of harsh words pierce right to the heart. Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavitasya chakirtir maranadati richate. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Now, if Arjuna hadn't showed signs of not fighting, and people had called him a coward, it wouldn't have bothered him, because it's not true, and no one would take it to be true. But if he left the battlefield, and his intention might be that he thought he had come to a higher level of consciousness by not fighting, but his enemies and his friends, Ranad Bhayat, you left the battlefield out of fear. They'll all take it he left out of fear. They'd be shocked. How could Arjuna become surprised? But why would any Kshatriya leave a battlefield when Sukhina Kshatriya Partha Labhanta yudham idrisham. Sukhina kshatriya partha labhanta. The kshatriyas become very happy when they get the chance to fight because it opens the doors to swarga, to the heavenly worlds. So why would a kshatriya... The only reason a kshatriya would leave the battlefield is out of fear. It's not expected, no, it's not heard of that he suddenly becomes a Buddhist and decides that fighting's not good. So Krishna told him that to be dishonored is worse than death. It's better to die than better to die gloriously than to live and be dishonored. It will be more painful. To die, it means some pain. But if you leave the battlefield, then as long as you live, you'll be afflicted by the painful arrows of words that they may not be true. You may not have left out of fear, but it will be very hard to convince. Others won't accept that. It just seems obvious. If someone leaves the battle, Kshatriya leaves the battlefield, it must be out of fear. It's the only reason. And that he'll be scorned. As much as a person is honored, that much he can be scorned. That if some low-class Shudra gets drunk and gets in a brawl in the street, yeah, who cares? The police lock him up and rough him up a bit. I don't think that maybe they're not allowed to do that these days, and throw him back out again when he's become sober. They might not even bother taking him to court, and just like that. But if a high court judge gets in a brawl in the street, it's practically unimaginable. Gets drunk in public and gets in a slanging match, which exacerbates into a physical fight, it becomes, he's not expected. He's expected to be of the highest exemplary character, the judge. And he'll be, as much as he was respected for being of exemplary character, such that he is positioned to pass judgment on others, which massively affects their life. Someone is declared innocent, okay, you go free. Declared guilty, spend the rest of your life in prison. Massive responsibility. And he has to be honored. The judge, the law enforcers, the police, they all have to be respected for their role. But if they dishonor the honor that's offered to them, then they become more blamed. We see in India and Buddhist countries, if someone in the dress of a sadhu or a Buddhist monk, if they engage in sexual activities, it's considered very, very bad. Everyone's engaging in sexual activities. But if a monk does, they become very, very, as much as they were honored before, that much they are dishonored. They become objects of disgust. What could be worse than someone who we respected as being so great, so above all these base activities, and he's honored, he's given facility, but then he's seen to be on the same level as a lowly, gross person. So to live with that is very painful. Of course, we have the case of the Avanti Brahmana, who was scorned by everyone, and what they said was true. All his life he'd been selfish, a miser, cheating in business, didn't care about anyone. It was true. And he was very much mistreated. But he accepted that as the means for his purification and as the means for him to become detached from what he was and fully surrender to Krishna. Others might not appreciate. They didn't appreciate. They would urinate on him and treat him in such bad ways. And they would say, oh, you're just pretending to be a saintly person to escape all this denunciation. You're just pretending. So it may be very hard if you want, even if you want to come clean and be good, people may not trust after you've been so bad. They may not trust it. But the Avanti Brahmana took it that, oh, all right, let them do all these things, and I'll just take it as what's deserved, and I'll worship Krishna. So this was Vidura's attitude also. The metaphorical, in this verse I mentioned the metaphorical arrows of harsh words, and then it's mentioned the actual bow, the actual physical bow of Vidura, which he left behind, which is a symbol of leaving everything behind, because even though he was called a Shudra, he was living in the Kshatriya family. And for a Kshatriya, his weapon is the symbol of his of his very being, of his identity. Just like those who look after cows, the cows are for them the symbol of everything that they perceive themselves to be. For the Kshatriya, it's his weapon. Maybe he may prefer the sword, he may prefer the bow is most common, or the club. For the Brahmana, it's having nothing. by his speech can be understood. And of course the thread. So he left that behind. All right, I'm not with you anymore. I'm leaving, and leaving, going, gone. Not expected to come back. It was much welcomed by Yudhishthira when he eventually did return. But someone who leaves like that, then why should you come back? He came back ultimately to deliver Dhritarashtra. Otherwise he had no business to come back. There's nothing to come back for. Leaving his bow means leaving his identity, means leaving the world. Now I'm going completely to the transcendental position. As long as he was living in the palace, he was a great devotee, but he was executing his worldly activities at the same time. But when you leave home, there's nothing left to do. Now only Krishna consciousness. That's all. Or only spiritual life. Now, it might seem strange that at the beginning of this verse, it stated that he was afflicted to the core of his heart. And at the end of the verse it says he was not sorry. What do we understand from this? He was not sorry, for he considered for the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Supreme means here not in the sense of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not that Maya is greater than Krishna, but he considered that Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridyeshe Juna Tishyati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rurtani Mayaya. We're all on the machine of the material energy. We're controlled by the Supreme Lord, who's ultimately supreme, but we're in this material energy and we are conditioned by it. We're conditioned by the bodies we get. The human body doesn't have the facility to fly in the air like a bird. We're conditioned. We have physical limitations, we have mental limitations, sensual limitations. And the acts of the external energy, what are we going to do? If there's a tornado, what are you going to do? You can be as transcendental as you like, but if there's a tornado, you're going to be affected. You either got to get in some secure building, or you're going to be maybe killed if you stay outside. Your body will be killed. So he recognized the power of the external energy. He was not sorry. The word given here is gata vyataha. Gata means gone, and vyata means pain. So the natural reaction when you're insulted is to feel some pain, but he didn't identify with it. And then it went. And he took it as the opportunity to leave this world. It's a trick, a psychological trick, by which someone can tolerate and be detached. It's not really a psychological trick, but it's understanding or accepting. I'm not this body, I have nothing to do with it. And I've got nothing to do with all the things that materialistic people say or do. So if I'm hungry, well, it's the body that's hungry. It sure feels like it, but it feels like it more if we identify that I'm this body. If we understand that, well, that's the body, I'm not the body, then one can tolerate all kinds of difficulties. People can insult, and like the Avanti Brahmana, so badly mistreated, but he wasn't affected by it, because he knew that it's not me, ultimately. It's the external energy acting on my gross body and my subtle body, but I am aloof from all of this. The external energy is affecting Vidura. That's stated here. He considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. But in the final sentence of this purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. So the external energy of the Lord acts on all living beings. Yaya samahito jiva. She bewilders by her all the living beings in this world are bewildered. But her acts upon the devotees, they're orchestrated by the internal energy. She is an energy who is the external representation of the internal energy. Daivihi esha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. The material energy is Krishna's daivi maya. It's ultimately spiritual, very, very hard to overcome, no doubt. But mahatmanas tumang partha daivin prakriti mashritaha. The fully spiritual internal energy, the pure devotees work under that. And so the external energy may appear to be affecting pure devotees, but it is the internal energy directing the lives, as Krishna directs the lives of everyone. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayeshe juna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarudhani mayaya. Krishna, in the core of the heart of everyone, directs the wanderings of all living beings, but he takes special note of the pure devotees, and through his internal energy, he orchestrates the material energy in such a way that it brings the devotees to Krishna. And it's all seamless, inasmuch as the material energy is acting and is bewildering the conditioned souls, and in the same scenario, the pure devotees are being directed by the internal energy. Here, Duryodhana, directed by the external energy, was insulting Vidura. And Vidura heard all that, and that was the internal energy acting upon him. So the both, acting both internally and externally, according to the level of perception of the characters involved. The same thing with Krishna, the deity. For the non-devotees, appears to be stone, or brass, or wood, or whatever. And they will even say, yes, we can bring a mallet and smash. But and Krishna will reciprocate with them. You see him as external, he'll act as external. And for the devotees, he reveals himself to them as their most beloved Lord. So Vidura, he was happy to take this opportunity. In one sense, he had spent all his life trying to talk sense to Dhritarashtra, especially to Duryodhana, protecting the Pandavas. But he saw, no, enough is enough. I've tried, no progress. All right, now it's time to leave and concentrate purely on Krishna consciousness by going to holy places. And just like that, just in a second, he didn't go home, think about it, do some special meditation or puja, and go to an astrologer and decide what to do, just on the spot, right, ready to go. Was it planned? Was he thinking of it anyway? That we don't know. But he was ready, internally. He was ready to go. He didn't have any attachment. It would have been easier in many ways just to, just to walk out, walk back to his house and go on and live with the insults. And then Duryodhana would think, yeah, I put him in his place. And Vidura would continue to get the facility and the superficial respect in the court. But he decided to leave. And when you leave like that to become a wandering mendicant, you're on the same level as everyone. They don't know who you are. The fact that you are a confidant of the king, how will they know? Once he goes outside the city, who knows him? It's not that we have famous faces. If some face comes up on your screen, the face of Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, is that how you pronounce it? Zuckerberg. Then you'll recognize it, probably. But previously, someone outside their village, they wouldn't be known. So Vidura, within the city, probably most people knew him, important member of the court. Outside, no one knew him. When then you're a sadhu, you go and they don't know what you are. You may be just any other sadhu. Someone had an argument with his wife and left and like that and became a sadhu. Might go back, you never know. But there's no honor. Little bit of honor for being some, it's like beggars. That's always there. In the Vedic culture, there's respect, but at the same time, thinking just parasites. Some people are thinking like that also. We see with Daksha and Narada that Daksha was respectful to Narada, but then when Narada preached to Daksha's sons that what are you bothering with all this having families, just renounce and go back to Godhead, then Daksha said, actually, we householders are much better than you so-called saints. So Vidura wanted that. He wanted the situation where there was no respect, no special respect, or even if someone respects you, you're in one place one day and another place the next day. Unless you go to a holy place, you can stay there. Which Vidura, he was visiting holy places. But then to be a holy man in a holy place, when there are thousands of holy men in one place, then who gets any special respect? There may be, in those days, I don't know if they had, but just like in Puri, the Shankaracharya there, he's offered special respect. There are so many holy men in Puri. But Shankaracharya, he's offered special respect as he's the leader of the present head of an ancient institution, spiritual institution. So he's offered special respect. Otherwise, there may be so many holy men wandering around and no one cares much for them. So from the spiritual point of view, it's desirable to be not honored. Once you become honored, then again you get a whole new set of social obligations and customs. Whereas the avadhut, he doesn't bother about anything or anyone. Rules, this, that. There are some limits. We see that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, although being so renowned, so unconventional, he didn't mix up with women. There's some things that you still follow. However unconventional you may be, if you're going to be a sadhu, there's that particular thing is to be observed. Even Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, once his servant came and they saw him all dressed up in fine clothes, like a Calcutta gentleman, Babu, and they couldn't understand why. He said, and Gaur Kishore said, it's better to be an honorable gentleman and be straightforward about being it than to be a cheating sadhu who dresses like a holy man but is secretly involved in so many illicit activities. So he did a little drama to make his point there. Otherwise, we see in the life of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he spent most of his life trying to avoid people respecting him. He wanted to live in Navadvip, but he would live under a boat, upturned boat, for instance. Live means just some slight shelter from the rain or this and that. One time he got so fat, because materialistic people would come asking for blessings. Then he went to live in a latrine. Who will come to see him in a latrine? Latrines, at least until recently in Bharata, India, they wouldn't pass the Georgia's government hygiene guidelines. Where's the latrine? You can find your way by smelling. If there, even to have a latrine is for a town. Otherwise, people just go out in the field. That's all. Bring a stick. Bring a stick because the pigs will also come to get their breakfast. So Gaur Kishore, he was trying to avoid being respected, just seeing just the opposite. For one who is honored, dishonor is worse than death. That's on the material platform. But for a transcendentalist, they may actually relish that as a chance for purification. But there is also the consideration, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, our own Srila Prabhupada, they're acting as religious leaders. So it's to preach, people have to respect you. That's the first. To hear submissively, they must have some level of respect. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that we should be a little better dressed than the materialists, a little more intelligent and knowledgeable, live a little better than them, just be on a higher level. So just so many arrangements he made just so that people would begin to listen to him. Srila Prabhupada also, in Mayapur, he was quite content to live in a grass hut, and he thought that this is very nice, this is better than so many palaces. He had so many opulent quarters in different parts of the world. But for preaching, he accepted those facilities, just like in London, he got this Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he had this big room where he would meet people, and so many big, important people were brought to meet him, so many big names. Some of them are known even now, even though they've been dead for a long time, at least in Britain. They're known. Lord Brockway, Alistair Hardy, I think, was brought, Graham Hill, racing driver, Donovan, a singer, George Harrison, big, big names in English society. They'd come and see him. If Shyamasundara had said that, well, my spiritual master, he's homeless, he lives under a cardboard box on Clapham High Road or something. As you see, so many people in London, they lie on the road at night, on the pavement, sidewalk, and they have a cardboard box to shelter them. They just put it over their body. Who would come to see him? No one would come. There are cases, in India there may be cases, like they came to see Gorky Shaw, you know, he's trying to avoid it. Maybe cases, but certainly not in the West. So some facility is needed for preaching. That's all. Otherwise, a devotee, he doesn't need all these things for himself. And it may be that someone a sadhu becomes respected for not having all these things, just like Srila Prabhupada established this Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, the first opulent temple to be built for quite a few decades. I think previous to that, the Jaipuria Mandir, that was maybe 80 years prior to that, was built. Maybe not that much. But still people don't go there much, even though it's such an opulent temple. It's not, for some reason or other, not that much life there, spiritual life. And now there are so many big temples. ISKCON's temple in Ramanreti is not the main attraction. It's the Prem Mandir. And physically it's much bigger, and I don't know, I've not been there. And then we have one pundit from South India is building the tallest temple in the world. So these are all big attractions. But the biggest sadhu in Vrindavan right now is one who's the most attractive to people, is the one who doesn't have an institution, doesn't accept money, and just talks about Radha. That's all. So he's a big hit. And people put him on Facebook, I guess. So it may work the other way also. It's somewhat of a quandary, because if you have an all facility, then people may like to come, and listen. You see, there's the video of Srila Prabhupada in Melbourne, in Australia, very plush quarters, and there's lawyers speaking to him. So that may work, but then others may criticize. Why are you sadhus dressing such nice clothes? And they were very, very critical of Srila Prabhupada when a Rolls Royce was hired to take him, and some people were very critical. It came in the newspaper, something like Swami comes rollsing in, or something like that. So it may work the other way also. You try to do something to get people's attention, you get it, but in a negative way. On the other hand, if you don't try to get people's attention, you won't get it. That's the way of the world. Or you might get it, but you might not. Just like probably I was talking about this sadhu in Vrindavan who's become very popular, but no doubt there are probably dozens of equally renowned sadhus, and one of them hit the jackpot, so to speak. Not that he was after it, but he became very popular. But we are a preaching mission, so we're trying to attract people, and we always have to see how to do that. And at the same time, not lose the mood that Vidura has, that he's not attracted to any of this. His real aim of life is Krishna consciousness. Buildings, and prestige, and all this kind of things. Not that our devotees have much prestige. But in India, yeah, some of our devotees are prestigious. In general, someone who's in this saffron cloth in India, that is respected. So we have to use this facility for preaching. At the same time, not be attached to it. That's called yukta vairagya. Use everything for Krishna and don't be attached. Padma patram eva ambasa, like the leaf of a lotus is on the water, but at the same time, no water can stay on it very long. A little water drop may fall on it, but it'll fall off. Kamala dala jala jibana talama. That example is given in another context. So, there are a few thoughts about this verse. And purport, any questions?
Guru Maharaj, there are two questions. All of Krishna's activities are glorious, and he's glorified as Ranchor Rai for leaving the battlefield. Could you kindly explain why he's glorified for...
Why is Krishna glorified for leaving the battlefield? Well, that's his opulence of renunciation. And it also showed that although he does name parthasti kartavyam, what is that? Kinchit name parthasti kartavyam. How does it go? I'm not obliged to do anything, Krishna. Yeah, I can't remember. Name parthasti kartavyam. Trishu lokeshu kinchina. I have no obligation to do anything within all the three worlds. But still I act, Krishna says. But then Krishna shows, well, I don't have to also. I'm not bound by your laws. And I have something to do for my... Anyway, Balaram can look after everything. I've got something to do for my other devotees also. For Muchakundan, he's also thinking ahead to Rukmini. Thus is analyzed the psychology of the Supreme Lord.
Guru Maharaj, what is the identity or symbol of a Shudra?
Identity or symbol of a Shudra? he doesn't, well, in Vedic culture, the different jatis would dress in such a way they could be understood who they are. Jati means subdivision within society, just like there's the barber jati, the cobbler jati, the fletcher jati. Fletcher means someone who makes arrows, like this. And then they have to dress in a certain way, and they're with a certain kind of earrings in a certain place. Men and women wear earrings in Vedic culture. A turban can be like this and not like that. So apart from the bow of the kshatriya, you'd also see, you must have seen even in your childhood that the smarter women in South India wear their saris in a particular way. And then the Vaishnav women wear in a different way. Probably Tengalai and Varigalai also wear differently. So you can tell by seeing the style of the sari, which jati they're from. So that's there also. Yeah, everything's different. Everything is different. Even Tengalai, Varigalai, everything has to be different. Everything, yeah, it's just, even the mantras, the tones they chanted in, and so it's quite. If you're raised in that culture, you can understand who's who, and it's easy to understand. And they all have their own rules: what they can do, what they can't do. The lower stratus people, they can come so close to a Brahmana's home, they can't come inside. Even today in South India, and maybe some parts of North India also, if someone has to come inside to do some work, they have to come from the backside, not from the front side, like that. Or they can't approach the front side at all. If they have to come, someone's bringing something, they have to come. So all these things are going on. It became simply some kind of exploitation and bad feeling when the spiritual element was lost.
Maharaj, we see that you're unaffected by all this adulation and worship, and as far as we've seen, you're the humblest person you've ever experienced. How do you do that, Maharaj? You've written the most, after Prabhupada's books, the most amazing books and all this, how do you?
Well, I know who I am. Who am I?
Pratipada Manukalam Krishna.
Who am I? Who said that? That's this Sudama Vipra. What is that? What does he say? What is that? King Krishna Srinikatana. How is the first line of that verse? I don't remember.
No idea much.
Krishna says, who am I? Just a fallen friend of a Brahma Bandhu. And who is Krishna? The abode of the goddess of fortune, but he has embraced me by his arms. You can look that up. Kim, look up the word Kim and Niketanaha. Then you'll get it. Comes in the 10th canto. It's also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kvaham daridra papiyan kim krishna.
Kva krishna
srinaketana.
Brahma bandhur
iti smaha. Brahma bandhur
iti smaha.
Iti smaham.
Smaham, yeah. Bahubhyam
parirambhitaham.
Bahubhyam parirambhitaham.
Parirambhitaham. Who am I? A poverty-stricken sinner. And who is Krishna, the abode of the goddess of fortune, but he has embraced me with his own arms. What's Srila Prabhupada's translation?
Who am I, a sinful, poor friend of a brahmana? And who is Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, full in six opulences? Nonetheless, he has embraced me with his two arms.
Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.
His Holiness Bhakti Goswami Yatindra ki jai.
Kva ham daridra papiyam, kva Krishna Sri Nikita. Brahma bandhur iti smaham, bahubhyam parirambitaha. That's it.